Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover Show. This is Haixi. Today, I'm joined by Ramit Girdar.
Did I pronounce that right? Yes,
okay.
You got it.
He's new on the team, so why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Ramit Girdar. I'm a software engineer here at Microsoft. I work mainly in the data and analytics space, but this is another very interesting space that I've always wanted to get into and start messing around. So I've joined Haixi today and this Cloud Cover.
Welcome.
Thanks.
So before we get started, I need to say a few words about the other Chris Reisner, your Euro host. He's not here today. And if you want to find out what happened to him, you can send him a tweet with hashtag, what did you do this time, Chris? So you can find out what happened to him, why he couldn't be here. Okay, today, we have a very interesting topic. We have Azure Functions. We have Chris Anderson, the real Chris, here to talk about Azure Functions and hopefully to show us some cool demos. So now we'll just hand the stage
to
you.
You guys don't disappear me, now I'm worried. Going after Chris is around here.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah, Chris tend to get disappeared from the show.
I really hope that I'll be here by the end of the show.
All right.
So I'm Chris Anderson. I'm from the Azure App Service team, and I'm working on the product Azure Functions right
awesome.
There. So it's kind of the new thing that the App Service team has released here at Build, and going to kind of walk you through what we're all about.
Okay.
Cool.
Sounds good. Looking forward to this.
Sure. So you know the thing that I have here is just this page that you go to if you type functions.azure.com into your favorite browser of choice. You'll get redirected to this page if you're not signed into, you know, the portal and all that kind of stuff. This is, you know, all of our marketing material, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the cool part here is this green button. If you click on Getting Started, you get brought to this page right here called functions.azure.com WAX sign-in. And we're going to watch the browser slowly crawl.
It probably didn't have its coffee this morning.
It apparently did not. We need two cups. So from this page, this is really where the, you know, awesome thing happens. We've made it super, super quick to create a function app. So the nice thing here is that if you just go ahead and you can either choose an existing function app and jump right into it, so you don't need to go find it in the portal, or you can create a new one from scratch right here. So for instance, I can go ahead and just create a new one, and we're just going to call this, you know, Cloud Cover. And we can go ahead and choose our region. Right now, this is going to create one by default in the Dynamics tier, which is available in three regions, and we'll be adding more as we kind of get ready for GA. Mm-hmm. But if you want to run in a very specific region, you can actually run in our dedicated tier, which is just regular app service, which is in every single region in the world.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So,
actually, for people that haven't heard about Azure Functions before, can I just give like a couple sentence summary of what Azure Functions actually does?
I actually also have like really nifty slide. For whenever I need to answer that particular question, I've got this, right?
Cool.
So what is Azure Functions? It's code, and then it's events and data, right?
Right.
And that's kind of where you get our awesome logo from, is kind of that notion that we really want to make it easy to write just a small amount of code in reaction to events. So the notion here is it's very similar to the pattern that we had with the WebJobs SDK. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is built all around the WebJobs SDK itself. The idea there is that there's lots of services out there on the Azure that you want to be able to react to new events happening with, for instance, queues or blobs, a service bus, event hub, et cetera. And we've also kind of added new things that you wouldn't have normally done with web jobs, for instance, HTTP triggers, which allows you to react to webhooks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This allows you to then write a very small amount of code to then be able to react to your blobs coming across the various services, and also, cool enough, being able to send out new blobs, new queue items, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Without having to necessarily bring in all the core libraries to do those things. It's just as simple as working with a POCO object or a string inside of your code. Mm-hmm. You don't need to understand the way that the storage SDK works to use storage.
Okay. So why don't I just use WebJobs?
That's a great question. WebJobs SDK is great because it's fully customizable.
Right.
Because you basically build the entire console app by yourself, you can bring in whatever libraries you want to, whatever versions of the libraries you want to. You can go ahead and write your own custom extensions to go and support whatever you want. So like I wrote a Slack extension like for web jobs just a couple of months ago that got blogged around. And I wrote that in like 6 hours. And I'm a Node guy, not a .NET guy. So for me to be able to write an extension in .NET in 6 hours, like I was really happy with that. But with functions, you know, the issue that you have with web jobs is just that you have to learn all those steps. You have to learn how to actually build a project. You have to learn all the best practices for what this setting should be and what that setting should be to optimize your output. And then to scale it, you have to know how app service scales. So you have to maintain that in like this dedicated SKU where you have to increase your VM instances.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about functions is we've been able to introduce this concept of, you know, kind of serverless computing, where you can kind of just write your code, you write just the function, and then we go ahead and host that on our Dynamics SKU for app service. And in the process, you don't have to worry about scaling out. So when those queues spike because, you know, build 2016 signups just happened, you don't need to worry about having to go and actually turn up the number of instances yourself or even setting up the auto-scale rules for that. It happens automatically that we scale out to as many instances as it needs to be able to process all those queue items.
Okay.
Beautiful.
So when I deploy Azure Functions, like you just showed, we're deploying an Azure Function application, right? So behind the scenes, it's still a web application underneath?
Yeah, so and that's kind of the interesting thing here. One thing that I can kind of show real quick to kind of prove that point is this is the portal UX. We're kind of jumping just a little bit ahead. But the one way that I love to prove that this is still just a web app underneath the covers, if I go to my app service settings, you actually see the traditional web app blade. And cooler than that, if I go to tools and I go to like, you can see Kudu here, and actually you can hit go, and I now have like my full Kudu site running behind my dynamic function app. So this means that I actually have access to things that you wouldn't normally expect from a serverless compute experience, like a command console to actually go ahead and navigate the system, run npm install, et cetera.
So it's, so it's very similar to web jobs, but it actually builds on top of it and adds that extra bit of step and also gives you the whole console application.
And it also means that we've simplified continuous integration, whereas with web jobs, you had to make sure that your web job ended up in app data, web jobs, continuous, your folder name, web jobs. Now you just deploy onto site www root. So now your traditional way of doing continuous integration with a website, like for if you wanted to deploy a like Express node site out and you just kind of have your traditional site in a GitHub and you push that out, it's kind of the same experience here. I have folders with all my functions in them, and you can see here that these are going to be the samples that I show you inside the portal. And I can access the code, I can modify these things directly. You can see I have node modules for this one here. And I'm able to, you know, run npm install from this. So if I wanted to kind of like, let's say I wanted to install Lodash, right? Lodash, very popular library for manipulating data, things like that in JavaScript. I can actually run npm install from this window.
Beautiful. So are there any limitations of as to what libraries or what extensions I can add?
There's certain limitations. Okay. We're running in a sandboxed environment to kind of make sure that you stay nice and secure, so you potentially run into those things. But overall, the sky's the limit. You can bring whatever packages you want to. You can bring in NuGet, so you can go ahead and set up custom deployment scripts, et cetera. So really, we have a hard time defining what those limits are because there's a really a lot of power here.
Beautiful.
So in terms of management, so if I understood correctly, so I put my functions into a function application, and that's my deploy unit. I deploy to Azure.
Exactly.
And when you scale it, it's scaled per function or per function application?
So essentially what happens there is that it ends up scaling per function application. But we're smart about, you know, basically load balancing to make sure that each of your functions is getting enough love from the runtime. So if one of your functions isn't being able to run because there's not enough memory, not enough resources, you just scale it to a new instance and that one's running. So that way we're very, very, you know, aggressive at trying to make sure that your function is always running at optimal, you know, performance.
Cool. Makes sense.
Cool. And are we limited to what languages we can use to, to deploy this?
Our first class language languages right now are Node and C#. You know, those made sense for us to kind of prioritize going out because C# is just, you know, the natural thing for Microsoft to support. Yeah. And Node's great because for anyone who isn't inside of the normal Microsoft group of developers, JavaScript's a lot like English. Like, everyone can do at least a little bit of it, so it means that we can really reach a broad audience. From there, right now we've got some really good work going on with PowerShell, so I'm actually going ahead and we're kind of doing a final checkoff on our first-class PowerShell support, and you can actually see that in our GitHub if you wanted to. And then we're also have a pull request for F#, which is in development. So soon you'll be able to write F# against functions.
Cool.
And then there's a kickoff meeting today for Python as well. So we're going to have Python support kind of coming along. So in a less than first class experience, you can actually do all those languages today. So for instance, if I go and click on new function, and I want to go to experimental, where we have all the things which aren't entirely baked, you can see that we actually have, you know, batch, bash, F#, PHP, and Python. And really, the interesting thing here is that you can't actually see our full implementations of these things. If I go off to the GitHub repo and I actually go and check out what the runtime is, inside of here, I can actually navigate to how we end up doing the invoker. So if we go to script and I go to a script invoker, you can actually see here that based off of the various types that I have here, we actually go ahead and, you know, basically call out. Right now we're just calling out, basically creating a new process and running your code kind of in an immediate sense, which isn't very performance friendly. So as we had first class support, we essentially spin up a host which is running all the time, running your code for you, so never have cold start times. These incur cold start times because we're basically calling out to a new process.
I see.
But as we had first class support for these new languages, we'll be making sure that they're not having that cold start impact. And as we want to add new language support, they'll probably end up showing up here first and then getting their first class experience. So if you ever have a language that you want to add support to, you can actually come and look and send us a pull request saying, hey, I want to add support for Go, for instance. We don't have Go here, but Go is supported in app service. And so it's really just waiting for someone to send a pull request for it.
Cool.
Pretty cool.
So the repository you're showing here, that's the source code for Azure Function?
Yeah, and you can actually see here that this is still called Azure WebJobs SDK script because we started this project back in June as kind of like a whim. I had taken over the WebJobs kind of, you know, space from working on my previous thing, which was the mobile apps Node SDK, which just reached 2.0.
Woo.
I'm a Node guy, which is, you know, kind of weird. I took over a .NET library, and so my first thing is let's pollute this by adding Node support to WebJobs.
Awesome.
And that's kind of how we started going down this idea, because we ended up with a really cool experience, but then the issue was, well, now people still have to go and compile this thing and deploy it themselves. No, let's just do WebJobs SDK as a service. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how Function started getting born.
Cool. So we'll have a link at the bottom of the show so you can have access to the repository.
Yeah, and we've already accepted a couple of community PRs, and we actually had the first PR for our portal repo. Our portal UX that you see there is also open source. It's the first portal UX inside of Azure that's open source.
Okay. Oh.
And we actually accepted we had our first community PR sent to us, so we're still in the process of cleaning it up. But we had our first one come in last night.
That is impressive.
Cool.
So it's you know, it's really fun being open like that, because it's very easy for me to give answers to customers, which is just go check out the source code.
Watch out. That's right.
Debug that.
Yeah,
this is awesome. So I have another question regarding the hosting multiple functions on the web app. Let's say you're accepting basically custom code in the system. What if somebody tried to write a really terrible code, like I'm trying to grab all the memories or use all the CPUs on the host?
Yeah, so within the function app, you basically have the responsibility of maintaining that. So if, for instance, you were accepting JavaScript code as part of your request or running eval on it, you're a terrible person and you shouldn't do that. But if you wanted to, you should definitely not run that inside the same function app as other functions that you cared about being touched. Because anyone who does that will have access to the full system inside of the function app. So every function within a function app can touch the other functions. And so if you need to worry about isolating functions, you should use a different function app for those other functions.
I see. Okay.
So is there a downside to using maybe just one or just creating one function per function app?
Just complexity. So that's really all it is the reason we did the function app concept is we wanted to make it really, really simple to kind of write and maintain your project. Mm-hmm. If you had to set up continuous integration for each function that you were trying to set up, you're trying to set up 10 functions, that's 10 continuous integration things to set up. That's a nightmare, right? For most people, a single function app containing all those things is going to be fine. You're not going to have resource contention.
Yeah.
For instances that you do, you go the extra step of just separating it out into a new function app.
Yeah. So basically, a functional app defines a trust circle
that
all the functions can be trusted in there.
Right. Yeah. And for instance, if you have a whole bunch of HTTP functions that are using the 128 megabyte container size, and you can see here in my function app settings, there's this slider here for changing your memory size. Let's say you're doing image processing, and there you want to just grab as much memory as possible. You can move that one out to its own container to make sure it gets that full memory and that you're not having to waste a whole bunch of, you know, extra memory on HTTP requests, which are always very small.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
And how do I authenticate when I deploy these functions? What's the authentication mechanism there?
For deployment, you're essentially using your SDM credentials. So you can go ahead and set up your own personal Git credentials so that each team member can deploy out to that using their own credentials. Or you can actually set up, you know, site-wide kind of service credentials. And so like one of the way, like for instance, if I wanted to set up continuous integration on the one that I had set up before, which should be this one. So let's say that this one right here, this is the one that I just created, I wanted to set up continuous integration on.
Okay.
We actually have it really simple to just click on configure continuous integration. Go to setup, and then you can choose your source. So in this case, we have, you know, GitHub, Bitbucket. You can choose your own external repository that just speaks Git, and we'll work with that one as well. Or you can set up local Git, so that way you can actually just push straight to the site and not have to worry about another, you know, repository owning things.
Wonderful.
So for instance, if I chose GitHub here, it'll actually authenticate me. I've already authenticated with GitHub, so this should theoretically just find all of my repositories. I can choose one of those things, and then boom, it's all set up and run. And it's just using my GitHub OAuth credentials, and it's setting up a webhook there, which is pointing at our SCM site.
Cool. So I have another question. I hope you're not getting annoyed by
now. No, this is great.
So another question is for the functions, are they inherently stateless in nature?
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. Essentially, each invocation is stateless, but you can go ahead and kind of import state, if you will. For instance, if we jump back to one of my other functions, in one of these examples that I have here for the scale one, essentially I'm maintaining state by keeping the state inside of each queue message that comes across. So each queue that comes in, I have this inbound queue item here. Mm-hmm. And so you can see here that way I'm kind of maintaining state between each execution, and I'll get to the sample later on if we have time, but this is essentially doing exponential growth. So each queue item produces n more items, and so that way I can go ahead and really hammer the system if I want to, which is great for a demo where I'm trying to show how we scale dynamically. And then also here, I'm also able to do outbound, mm-hmm. but more importantly here, I have this telemetry thing, and this telemetry is actually talking to table storage at that point.
Right.
So a cooler example of that would then be the results function. And then in this one, I'm actually going ahead and I'm pulling in from the table storage using an iQueryable. And this is actually able to then maintain state inside of table storage for me. Mm-hmm. So we still follow the best practices of you shouldn't use a stateless service to maintain state.
Yep.
You could theoretically use the file system because that file system is persisted across all of your functions, so they all share the same local file system. But doing file I/O inside of a function is a great way of increasing how long your function runs and your perf hit. Yep. Talking to table storage and blob storage is always the best way of doing that.
Perfect.
Pretty cool. So is this would this count as one of the reasons where I would say, hey, should I use Service Fabric or should I use Azure Functions?
Yeah, I mean, Service Fabric is designed to do microservice architecture, right? As far as hosting an application doing microservice architecture goes, Service Fabric is top notch. Functions can do the microservices kind of pattern, but right now we're kind of in the early stages, so we don't have tooling to help you develop a full end-to-end application framework. We don't have the ability to do state, and so you can't do state like you can do in Service Fabric. And of course, Service Fabric has a lot of things to help you like automatically roll back and things like that that were so simple we wouldn't, you know, probably touch until, you know, maybe on down the line someone sends us a PR for that feature. But you know, one of the things we are investigating is that because Azure Functions is literally a runtime which is running on top of app service, we could theoretically take the runtime and run it on Service Fabric in the future. So these are all things we're kind of playing with. And at that point, you would get the best of both worlds.
Got it. I see.
Another question for you. let's say I have a function. Mm-hmm. What are the maximum number of machines I can scale it out to?
So my answer is you don't need to know that.
Okay.
So that's kind of our when you're running a dynamic tier, that's our whole point. We want to kind of allow an environment where you don't need to think about servers. We really want you to feel kind of unburdened by having to figure out how your thing's going to scale all those pieces. We have a very smart controller that knows how your functions run, and we can see all the metadata that your functions are kind of putting out. Mm-hmm. And from there, we kind of design what your scale profile and things like that look like. We have some knobs. They're very advanced knobs, and we'll add better tooling and things like that for people who want to go under the covers and start tweaking those things. But going out the door, for now, we're just not talking about number of instances. We will scale out to as many instances as we think is necessary. We are coming up right now still with your max number of concurrent executions.
Right.
And we're actually trying to think of maybe not call it max, but what we think is the bare minimum that we would give you as a max. But in some regions, we have potentially a lot of capacity. We could scale out very large, and so we might be able to go even larger. So these are kind of things that we're working through right now as we go towards GA. Okay. But we're thinking big.
That is very interesting.
That triggers more questions.
This is a deep, dark hole.
So I have several questions regard to that. So the first one is there a way for me to actually set an artificial limit how much I want to scale? I guess this thing is not free, is it?
Yeah, so it is free right now. So
okay.
until sometime in summer, we're actually going to just not be charging at all. Mm-hmm. And then sometime in summer, we're going to do preview pricing, which is going to be half of what the real pricing will end up being, which is also very cheap. So literally, this is going to be free, which is as cheap as you can get, very cheap, and then GA pricing, which is still going to be, this is going to be cheaper than anything else that you can use out there for running a single execution in a day.
Mm. So it's charged by compute hours?
Yeah, so we bill you per the 100 milliseconds that you consume. So if I have a function which runs for 102 milliseconds, and then it runs for another 102 milliseconds, essentially what will happen there is we charge you always for the first 100 milliseconds, and then we add up those 200 millisecond pieces, and it's 4 milliseconds. You end up at 204, which we round to the nearest 100 milliseconds, which ends up being 200.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how that math works. And we do aggregation on the function app to help maintain those units, and then we emit units for each 100 milliseconds we see you consume.
Wow.
And we also charge you for number of executions. So essentially, for each execution that we see, there's just a static cost of handling an execution inside of our system, and so we charge you for that static cost. That way, it's not baked into that per millisecond cost.
Okay. So just to summarize, when I first execute a function, I get charged a static price, and then based on my execution time, I get charged an additional cost,
yeah,
which is in 100 millisecond chunks.
And that allows us to basically charge you the bare minimum
for
executing that function. We can be very, very specific on what you're being charged for.
Right.
Cool. Pretty cool.
All right. And then Stanley, you are going to show us some cool demos.
Yeah, so I think I've got a bunch of intro presentations that I've already done, and considering we've kind of gone deep here, what I'd like to do is start getting into some more advanced scenarios and kind of showing where we really start to shine. So if you want to, you can check out the videos that we'll have kind of listed underneath the video for the talk that I did at Build, where I kind of do an intro where I walk through what an HTTP trigger is, I walk through a timer trigger, I walk through a queue trigger. So if you need the basics, maybe you can pause here and go watch the video if you want to. I'm going to try to explain things as I go along with these demos. They're not that advanced. They're just doing a little bit more, and so you might get a little lost with what I'm doing. But I'll try to keep it very obvious and explained. And you guys just ask me questions. Keep me honest.
Sure thing.
So this is a cloud cover. We do advanced stuff.
So before you get into the demo, I had another question about the cost. Let's say my function only runs for 10 milliseconds. Is it free?
No, it's
just for the static cost.
Yeah, so you always get charged for the first 100 milliseconds.
Okay, so you always do.
That prevents people from doing that exactly.
All right. Sounds good. Let's get into the demo then.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got three demos here. I'm going to go ahead and start with the awesome one, which shows the power of kind of functions plus logic apps. You know, logic apps is great for integrating lots of different services together, and especially for building a workflow that relates to those integrations. Mm-hmm. One thing that has always been a little bit difficult with logic apps until functions came around was adding 1+1. You needed an API app that you wrote to do a custom adding 1+1. And like, you know, for the most part, you don't end up needing to do those scenarios, but you always end up finding those like 20% cases where you do need to end up going off and running some custom code and doing some arithmetic or whatever. Yeah. One instance that I found here is that there currently isn't a connection out to sentiment analysis for logic apps. And I really, really like the sentiment analysis stuff, especially for analyzing tweets. That way I can actually prioritize which ones that I respond to through a day, because we get a lot of tweets about functions.
Yeah.
So one thing that we can do here is that before we actually start this, you know, demo, we can go ahead and just take a quick tweet that I'm going to go ahead and send out.
Let's do it.
Awesome. This is live, gentlemen. I mean, ladies and gentlemen.
So is this connecting, while you're taking the tweet, is this connecting to Sentiment 140? Is that...
So this is just connecting out to the... this is connecting out to Cognitive Services, the Text Analytics API.
Beautiful.
And specifically, the Sentiment API is the one that I'll be calling into. And I'll go and explain some of how I'm hitting that. Cool. For there, we can go ahead and just kind of...
I need to get into the shot.
There we go.
All right.
There we go. I'm just going to tweet that right now. Cloud cover talking about Azure Function.
Yeah, I think that was the first time I took a picture on this show.
Me too. Well, good things happen when Chris Risner is on.
Yes, it's going wild.
That's the reason he was
what
disappeared.
What did you do this time, Chris?
Yeah, we'll find out pretty soon.
So I'm going to go ahead and tweet that now, and that's going to go live. And you guys will see that now, even though the video is, you know, a little pre-recorded. But you'll kind of see, we'll now be able to see later on in our demo, that tweet will have been processed, right?
Now you know when we record our cloud shows.
I'm now leaking the implementation details here. So inside of this code that we have here, let me just kind of show you what I'm doing. So this is a node function. Like I said, I'm a node guy. So I try not to always do node. I try to balance them out between the node and the C# and the other ones. But in this case, I kind of used node because I like using the request modules. Basically, my whole reason I did this is I wanted to use the request module. What I'm doing here is I'm getting data that's coming in, and I'll show you where that's being sent to me from logic apps. Mm-hmm. But what I then did was I went and looked for the text attribute on that data that was coming in. This is essentially just my webhook payload that's being sent to me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And from there, I'm generating a unique ID because that's what is required by the Cognitive Services API. And I'm passing it this, documents, and I'm just passing it one document to analyze, request ID, and then data.txt. Mm-hmm. Right. And that data.txt is being fed to me from another source. In this case, it's being logic apps. And then from there, I'm just printing out a whole bunch of, you know, information when I actually see that happen. And then I go ahead and I look for an error. And if there's no error, I just send back score with body.documents, the first document score.
Are you also checking to make sure it's English?
I'm not doing anything. I'm just assuming that it's going to come in and that the Cognitive Services is going to understand it.
Okay.
Yeah, so just very, very simple process here where I'm looking for that thing. I could, thanks to logic apps, actually build in a step which goes and checks to see if it's English. And if it isn't, it goes off and runs it through the Bing Translator API because they actually have a Bing Translator API inside logic apps flow.
Correct.
And so if I wanted to add that process in there, it'd be very easy for me to just insert that step into my process. Mm-hmm.
So the code here is just vanilla Node.js code. There's no special structure. I didn't see you use any Azure Function module or per se.
Yeah, no. The only thing that you end up doing here, the basic process for functions, is that you export a function which has a context object, and on that context object is all the data for your execution. So you don't even need to have these extra things here. But for sugar, essentially, we've added on the other things that are being passed to your function onto the parameters. So you can go ahead and always use context. Or if you want to keep your function simple, in this case, I have a single input, so it's very simple. I can just, you know, add that on there, and we go ahead and pass that along as well on the function.
Cool.
Got it.
So very simple to use. And I'll show C# version later, which we actually go ahead and actually do reflection on. And so there's no ordering or anything like that there. We actually do reflection on the names and the types and make sure that you get exactly the type that you want for the exact parameter. So in Node, because it's not strongly typed, we actually have to kind of guess at the order of the parameters that you want to. But inside of .NET, we can be very explicit because it's strongly typed.
Yep.
So inside of here, you actually see that we had a log happen, and this is actually our tweet that got processed. You can see here that in the logs, I spit out the full request that came through, and then the score that actually we got was, you know, 0.849. So when we go ahead and see where this ended up later on in the demo, you'll remember that that's the score that we actually had for this tweet.
Wonderful. And is this function always running, or did you just run it right now?
This function's always running right now. So as soon as it's live, it's always running. So.
Beautiful. So there you go, guys. Tweet at it and let us know what you think about the show.
Yeah, I actually sent out a quick tweet last night that I had the demo working and sent a screenshot, and people were trying to send a very funny text to see if it could confuse the cognitive things. I'm not sure whether or not I can say that there, but there's a very funny one there where it's using a piece of UK slang that meant it's very good,
right.
And it confused it a little bit.
Right.
So it's a very funny kind of thing to start playing with the AI pieces.
Yeah.
So the way that I'm actually passing those tweets along here is I'm actually using Logic Apps. Mm-hmm. For those of you who aren't familiar, this is the Logic Apps designer. And you can see here that I've gone ahead and set up a new tweet trigger, and I'm just looking for Azure Functions inside. This is the query text. So if you go into Twitter and you like search for Azure Functions, those same results that you get back there will be returned by this. The next thing that I did is I actually added this link to my function. The interesting thing here is I've already set up this function, so I can't show you, but functions actually shows up under its own specific menu inside of Logic Apps. So you can see here that I can actually choose functions in the same region. And I can see here that I had created the cloud cover one, so that one's showing up now. But then the one that I had chosen was this Schronde 427. And there's the sentiment function that's showing up there. And what this is looking for is I have generic webhook type trigger functions. And so if I look at the function itself, and we go back to this integrate tab that I didn't show you guys before, you can see here that the webhook type is actually generic JSON. And essentially, we look for the fact that it's a generic JSON webhook. And then Logic Apps knows that, oh, hey, I know how to talk to this thing.
Right.
And I can go ahead and send things to those functions. And so that's the way that that's discovered. From there, I can go ahead and click that. And this way, I can actually reuse that sentiment piece across multiple Logic Apps. So if I wanted to use that sentiment analysis thing for other text, things coming in from Yammer or things coming in from Slack, I could actually use that everywhere. And it's just a reusable piece of code.
Yep,
I could also, because Logic Apps is so slick, I can actually go ahead and enter in some data here. So let's say I could do some JSON there, but I can also just send it a raw string. And I can actually type code inside of Logic Apps. So if I wanted to add 1+1, I could do that right here. No other kind of steps required.
That makes your life so much easier.
Yeah. This is crazy.
This is awesome.
So I'm not going to go ahead and do that because that's not required. And then the other thing I did here is I just output to Slack. This is, for anyone who's familiar with Logic Apps, this is not really crazy. But the cool thing is now I'm able to get this data from custom codes. If I wanted to go and do analysis, or if I wanted to, let's say, calculate a custom icon emoji for my Slack bot, because that's important to me. I love my emojis and making sure that they're the right emojis.
Yeah.
I could actually include that as part of this parameter.
Cool. That is wonderful.
Yeah. So now we can actually go ahead and kind of see the end results here. I have my bot channel here, which I do a lot of. I do a lot of Slack bots, and so I just have my own bot channel inside of our @ Slack group. And you can see here, if you zoom in, our lovely photo.
Awesome.
And so you can see here that people have been kind of tweeting about Azure Functions. People kind of started last night after I started mentioning what we were doing, and so people started tweeting things and trying to give give it really funny things to say.
All right.
So, and then you can see here that we actually got the number that we expected here. So this one said, 0.849, right?
Wonderful.
So really fun. I can go ahead and do so a little bit more with that if I wanted to, like give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down based off of what that score was. I could at a glance see how positive the tweets are that are coming through my stream. So very simple,
amazing.
Very nice. You could expand that. The real thing is this is just a hello world sample of how this becomes useful, but it goes much, much further than this over the long run.
Yeah. Amazing.
Cool. So the next thing that I had kind of in mind to show was this bot framework thing. And this one, I'm going to be honest, I stole. So we have a really, really lovely group of MVPs and community members who have been playing with functions. Mm-hmm. And this is actually from a guy named Andreas Helland. He's been on a roll with just awesome blogs. So you should make that you actually check out, you know, his Medium post. He's got just a lot of blogs about functions and other really cool things inside of the Azure space. He's clearly an Azure junkie. We probably need to give him some help, but I'm not going to be the one to stop him. So in this case, I took his sample and I just modified it slightly so it could kind of run in my group. You can see the code that I have here on this gist that we'll share out. And I've got one thing that I'll point out here is that we're actually importing NuGets here. If you just specify project.json for any of your C# functions, mm-hmm. we're smart enough to then run a NuGet restore for any time that we see that file change.
That is awesome.
And so in this case, I'm actually able to, in my sample that I'll show you here, I'm actually calling out to the Microsoft.bot.connector library. This isn't something that we do by default yet. We might do that, but because bots are really awesome. We just haven't gotten around to doing this yet. But any NuGet package that I want, whatever you want to do, private NuGet, all those things, it's all supported because we're just using the ASP.NET project.json format.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome.
Cool. So in this sample, and I won't necessarily go into too much details because this blog actually has a lot of really good things about what he's doing here, but he essentially wanted to create a bot which responded with Bender Rodriguez quotes from Futurama. He's a big fan of Bender. And he wanted to go ahead and make it so he could have a conversation with Bender, awesome. Basically. And it's as simple as, you know, this code here has some formats. We're essentially going through here, and if I zoom in, you can see here that we're looking to see what type the message is, and we have other handlers for different types of messages. So for instance, there's ping types, there's delete user types, like all these things help abstract away the different activities that happen inside of chatbots. Mm-hmm. The bot framework has provided this thing to make it easy to react to.
Yep. Wonderful.
And you can see the main code that we have here is we have this giant switch statement, which basically looks for which quote we want based off of a random number. So it's very blunt. We could probably do something a little bit more fun here. But it gets the job done, which is what we need to do for this, you know, awesome demo here. Yep. And the cool thing here is I can take this URL that we're given at the top of this, at the top of any HTTP trigger, you have this URL. Mm-hmm. And I can paste that into my bot framework thing. And so you can see here, I've already done that for this sample, and I've already just kind of done one to make sure that it worked before the demo that I was going to show. But you can type in quote here, and we can actually see that I got a response, and we can see in our logs that the request came in and all that kind of stuff.
Cool. Wonderful.
So now you can use functions to kind of build this, you know, end-to-end bot framework in a very lightweight manner. If you wanted to do something with the bot framework has integrations with things like, you know, Slack and Twitter and Yammer, all of these really, really cool things, mm-hmm. you can just use functions as the backend for actually doing the analytics processing. Cool. You can also use Azure App Service. So if you want to do something a little bit more powerful, you can just deploy this straight down to a web app. The bot framework has their own little template for deploying onto web apps. But for something lightweight, functions is great.
Yes, definitely.
So the last thing that I was going to show is we actually have some really cool things we've been developing for monitoring. You know, one of the things that's really interesting when you're talking about things like this, where you're doing like real-time and highly scalable pieces, is you want to be able to see what's going on with your function. For web apps, we have this technology that we've done called Pulse, which kind of gives you a real-time view into how many requests are coming into your web app per second. Mm-hmm. And you can see kind of in real-time, are we getting a lot of 500 requests or something like that. In this case, we can do the same thing inside of functions, but we've made it specialized so we can kind of see per function invocation, not just HTTP. And so what I've got here is I've got this sample, which actually goes ahead and does an exponential growth. So essentially, I pass it a queue item, and on the queue item, I tell it how long to grow and how fast to grow. And then it goes ahead and spits out n number of items until it reaches its max generation. Mm-hmm. So this allows me to do an exponential growth without killing myself. The max generation part is important. Right. If you don't stop it, it will cost you a lot of money. Yeah. And you might get a call from Azure Security saying, why are you trying to DDoS storage?
And this per function tracking, it's done automatically. You don't need to do anything in your function code.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so awesome. The cool thing that I'll do here is I'm just going to go ahead and give this increment that. And I set the generation in this last one that I did to 5, which is, you know, it's not very large, right?
Right.
So let's set this up to something which is just a little bit bigger, like 9. And this is exponential, right? So 5 to 9 is, you know, a pretty big growth.
Right.
So go ahead and hit run. And then we'll jump over to our scale and go off to monitor. And you can see that this is still coming soon because it's a work in progress to get it inside the portal. But if we jump off to the live event stream link, we can actually see real time how the thing's going. And so what this is running about 10 seconds behind just to kind of get through the end-to-end pipeline. But you can see here that we can actually see the growth hit, started, and spiked. And now you can actually see it processing the items in real time. So we kind of have this little jagged line there, but we processed a lot of them at once, and then it's kind of trailing off.
I see. So this is a separate portal for now.
Yeah.
But it will be integrated with Azure portal?
That's the goal, yeah. And so you know, for now, you can go ahead and just use this external endpoint. But we're hoping to kind of give you that real-time insight. Just with the logs, we actually want to show you executions as well, kind of in real time.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think this is tremendously useful, especially if I go to a serverless architecture.
Yeah.
Basically, I want to see how my functions behave.
And you can even go beyond that, and you can go ahead and ask your question.
I was asking, where do I see if I'm hitting 500s or, just that where execution
fails. Yeah, you can see here that I'm not actually having any errors.
Right.
If I were to go ahead and just like slap a throw, you know, exception or somewhere in there, all these things would fail. And you can see that I'm starting to get to the exponential growth part of this. So we actually created a lot of queue items. So in the beginning, it creates a very few amount of items, and then as it goes longer, we create a lot in our last generation. So I'm guessing if I were to set this to 10, we'd see this spike up even further.
Beautiful.
Right. But that's just one way that we can kind of give a quick example of how this thing grows. Cool. The other cool part there ends up coming with the logging that then comes out of this. So inside of this, it's kind of small on this page. So you can see here that I actually have logs for every single one of those functions, and I can replay every single execution that you've seen me do during this entire show. So in this case, I had a whole bunch of my exponential scale test ones. And this takes a little bit to load sometimes the first time you load it, because we're actually indexing a whole bunch of log data only when you go to the page. That way we're not running in the background a whole bunch of index operations taking up your CPU, so it only happens in develop time. Mm-hmm. But essentially, I can go here and I can look at any invocation that just happened. So in this case, I can actually see for the last execution that happened, what was the max generation number? And you can see that the max generation was 9 in this case. So I can actually see the full data that came into my system. Okay. And the awesome thing here is that if there's an error and I'm logging out errors as part of my function, I can see the logs per invocation. And so I can really replay and really triage and debug what happened during that particular break.
And this is very similar to web jobs as well, because I remember seeing this was web jobs.
This is still just web jobs. If you actually look up here, the reason that's still in a separate portal is we haven't taken all of these different pieces and kind of merged them together under portal. So that's kind of the next step here, is we've got all these things, we're kind of fine-tuning these things. Mm-hmm. Web jobs logging has actually gotten exponentially faster. It used to be one of these things where if you disabled logging for web jobs, you'd get a 2x perf increase because of all the operations we were doing. In the last 3 months, we've gone through and made that so minimal, you don't even see a perf hit from turning on logging.
Wow. Interesting.
And so those things will roll back into web jobs. The great news is for existing web jobs customers, if you don't want to use functions, totally fine. Upgrade to the latest NuGet package that we'll be releasing soon, and you'll get all of these perf, you know, goodness that we've been investing in.
Wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, this is tremendously useful. I mean, in the dynamic serving environment, sometimes you've got 500 error, but when you go back, the context is gone, right?
Right.
But here you have the full context, you can play it back, you can debug.
Yeah. And that's really the benefit of being a very opinionated framework, right? We have logging inside of web applications for your random express site, but you still have to kind of dig through IIS logs in order to see what happened, and you're not really getting a per request logging going on there.
Exactly.
You have to either build that yourself, or just kind of suffer through a whole bunch of streaming logs. Because we're opinionated, we give those things to you out of the box. So you've given up some freedom, but in the meantime, you've gotten a lot of power just automatically.
Interesting. Cool. So it looks like web jobs and functions are going to go parallel to each other, and at some point they're probably going to merge, or are they going to?
We'll end up seeing how that happens. We don't really have any plans on changing the way web jobs works. There's a ton of customers using web jobs. It's actually the reason that I was able to kind of push this idea of web jobs as a service so successfully. It was because we already had a really good history of web jobs. Mm-hmm. The major issue we had seen with web jobs was that there was a fairly large adoption curve. So if you like web jobs, you should feel safe in web jobs. What we're investing in with functions is making it easier and easier and easier to adopt this web jobs technology by offering it as a service.
Got it.
And the cool thing here is that because we were building the runtime itself, just kind of to be its own portable thing, we're going to have local development and stuff like that coming up soon, so you'll be able to run functions locally on your own machine or deploy them theoretically on-prem. We won't give you an SLA on that, but you can run this on-premise if you need to. Visual Studio and VS Code tooling will be kind of coming around soon as well. So for now, the portal is still kind of the most smooth experience, but we'll be investing in making sure that you can do your normal local development, continuous integration experiences before we GA.
Interesting. So last question. Whenever I do web jobs, I'm still bound by the scale of my website or my web app.
Yes.
But with functions, I'm not bound by that.
Exactly.
Right? So that's another point where I can choose functions or web jobs.
And I'm actually got a blog post, which is just kind of waiting for me to hit the publish button, which is versus. And that kind of gives you a great picture of, when to use which technology. Mm-hmm. If you don't find yourself needing the special things that web jobs do, I think that you will find yourself being very pleased by what we're doing inside of functions.
Okay.
But there's always cases, I kind of see it as it'll grow eventually to be that 80-20 rule. Most people will be fine in functions, but there's going to be a 20% of people who need this very customized thing. Mm-hmm. And web jobs is right there for you. The similar experiences, everything that we've invested into functions rolls right back into web jobs. You just get you get more control, but with that more control comes more responsibility.
Sure. Pretty cool.
Yeah. This is great. So are there any more demos or?
So those are, that's everything that I've got here kind of prepared today.
Cool.
Like I said, check out the video that we'll go ahead and link off to my build talk that I gave.
Yeah.
And we'll have blogs and stuff like that coming out there frequently. We, you know, one of our marketing guy, Jeremy Thrake, actually came out with a really, really good video blog about iterating this with Office 365 and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really pumping out a lot of samples, trying to get this stuff, you know, show the power of what Functions is doing. But it's a really new technology. You're like really, the ground's open for anyone who wants to kind of get involved in the serverless space to kind of make their mark on like cool patterns and things like that. We're really counting on the community to help us develop what the right development patterns are for this technology.
Okay. And I guess if people want to get more information on Functions, they can go to azure.com. And you have a Twitter handle that you want to share with people?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is Crandy Codes. It's a lovely name. But yeah, I'm always on Twitter. There was actually the person who gave us our first pull request for the portal code that we had was actually tweeting at me like his issue that he was having on the portal. I was like, oh man, like I don't know, that's not a known issue. I have no idea what could be causing that. Could you please open up an issue on GitHub?
Right.
And he went a step beyond and he actually went and debugged what the issue was and sent us a pull request to go and like actually fix the error that he was finding. So
that's wonderful.
Really, really fun. Yeah, you can always engage with me on Twitter. I tweet too much. So it's really a great opportunity. If you need to bother someone about Functions, I'm there.
Cool, awesome. Great. Thank you very much. This is great.
Time flies.
Thank you. A lot of fun. Thanks a lot, Chris.
We are only 1 hour in, so. But this
we
is
go
great
on
stuff.
For more time. This is very interesting.
We need a couple more.
Yes. So thank you everybody for watching. I hope Chris will come back soon, and be sure to follow this Chris and Azure Functions for new developments.
And don't forget to tweet Chris Risner.
Hashtag
thank
what
you.
To Chris.
Yes. What did you do, Chris?
What did you do,
Chris?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.